Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Morehead State University President Dr. Jay Morgan. Dr. Morgan, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, great to be with you, Leanne. Thank you.
A lot has changed here at Morehead State University since the coronavirus pandemic began. Right now, it's usually a bustling time as life gets warmer here on the campus, and it's kind of strange to be on an empty campus right now.
It is very strange right now. I'm used to spring breaks on campuses. But if you look out across our quad today, it's a beautiful day on campus. The trees are blooming, the grass is starting to grow, but there is not a single person in sight. So it is a ghost town, but that's okay at this point. We're trying to make sure we're safe for our students and employees, and everybody here has been so wonderful during this. But yes, 2 weeks makes a big difference.
Now, Morehead State made the decision pretty early on to transition classes, at least temporarily, to online, and then finally to finish out the semester with fully online instruction. How has that transition gone?
I think it's gone pretty well. All things speaking, we do admit, and I think most would admit, it was a very abrupt transition. We made the decision starting March 23rd, which was the Monday after our spring break, to go fully online. We did that, and then we extended that through the rest of the spring semester all the way to graduation around May the 8th, the end of finals. It went pretty well, I think. You know, most of our campus is pretty good at distance education. We were already this spring semester 30 to 35% delivery through distance ed, so we had a little bit of a head start, and a number of students who were already in that modality of teaching. But our other units who had to make the shift very quickly around March 23rd did so pretty effectively. We had a number of our staff who were very experienced in distance education delivery, helping other individuals who were changing their instructional methods. Our students were wonderful. There was a little jarring in the system, though, but I think we're off and running pretty well now.
One of the main concerns that was brought up when this all began was students who may not have access to internet at home. And I know that Morehead State has come up with some resources that are available to assist those students.
Yes, you know, in the area that we serve, our 22-county service region, and really beyond, there are some limitations with broadband internet accessibility. So a couple things that we did, and we recognized that very early on. One is we communicated a lot with our students on where they could find that broadband access if they did not have it in their homes or available to them. A number of our KCTCS campuses, community and technical college campuses throughout our region, were very gracious in letting students come to their parking lots and access broadband internet. There are a number of businesses around that made it available to students to pull up in their parking lots. We have the ability for our students to remote into our library. We have a good IT backbone here that's allowing students to come in a number of ways. And we've even gone so far to work with, to the degree we can, loaning laptops to a couple of students who just did not have a computer at all. So those were in limited forms, of course. And so I think our staff across the board have been very, very good at trying to help students make it over this, hopefully, short-term hurdle.
Now, I know that the campus has been cleared out. A lot of students moved out last week. And how did that move-out process go?
You know, that was, we were all holding our fingers crossed during that. And I'll have to say on the backside of it, I was extremely impressed, very impressed with how our students handled it, with how our staff organized it. What we did is because We have a fairly large segment of students living on our campus, several thousand students in our residence halls. Our staff organized it spread out over 7 or 8 days to spread the number of people out. We then spaced it out by residence hall, by day, by floor, and by window of time. So what that accomplished was is that any given day, we had about 350 to 375 students on campus moving out, but they were all dispersed all over the place. So that limited the amount of exposure that students and their families who may be coming with them, you know, had on campus. At the end of the week, end of last week, last Friday, we only had just a handful of people left, some of them staying with us long term. But I can't compliment our people enough on the job that they did, and the students were phenomenal. So we were a little concerned on the front end, but it worked very well on the back end.
What arrangements were made for those students who were unable to move out? I know that there's a few still left on campus.
Yeah, there are. You know, we have a nice contingency, a small contingency, but a nice one of international students who can't readily make it back to their home country quickly. So we're housing those students to the end of the spring semester. We also have a number of other students who may be coming many states away, and moving quickly like that doesn't lend itself very well. So we've worked with probably about less than 50 or 60 or less to remain on campus. We're moving them around to strategic locations in certain residence halls for protection for them, and to make sure that, you know, we've done what we needed to do to service them. They'll be staying until the end of the spring term. We did have a couple of individuals who are still coming to campus this week who may have had special circumstances. Maybe they live several states away. Maybe there was a health issue. So we're working with them a little bit more one-on-one. But we have probably less than 50 or 60 stay with us, which is a nice number. We welcome them. This is their home, and we want them to feel at home. So many of them consider this their home, and we want them to stay here if that's what they need to do.
Now, the Maymester and the summer terms are fast approaching. I know that registration is opening soon for those. Will those go on as planned, or has some adjustment been already planned for those times?
Sure. Morehead State University is full speed ahead for summer terms and for fall 2020 terms. Starting on April the 6th, so not too far away, students, if you're listening, April 6th starts advanced registration for summer and for fall. So we'll have a real good look at what students will be selecting going forward. Our summer terms, by typically every summer term we have, is probably about 90 to 95% through distance education anyway. So there will not be a lot of required modifications for summer 2020 because most all the courses are either online or off-campus type courses anyway, like clinicals and practicums and things that students would not need to come to campus for. So we're in real good shape for summer. Starting in the fall of 20, we will be converting some of our traditional face-to-face courses to a little bit more of a hybrid format. Some will probably tilt a little bit more online. We want to make sure for fall of 2020 we have a good balance so we can respond to any challenges that we might see when we get to August or so. So if students are registering for fall, they should start seeing a variety of courses. Some of them may get converted through the summer, but we want to make sure we're responsive to what our students want.
Do you see, I guess in the fall specifically, when we're maybe changing how we offer instruction for certain classes, are there things that you're doing to prepare the faculty to get ready for that?
We are. Our Office of Distance Education did a great job during our quick turn during spring break a week or two ago, getting our folks ready for this spring. And I know they're having discussions about ramping up more training during the summer to make sure that faculty will be ready for some type of expanded hybrid or online delivery. That does not mean we're going to be all online in the fall. What it means is we want a good, healthy mix so students can have what they need. We have particular challenges in some academic areas of delivering online materials, just difficult to do. So I would expect over the summer, and I've already heard these conversations going on how certain courses who offer some degree of difficulty to be taught online might put more material online, but maybe not 100% exclusively. So I would imagine this summer, I'm sure this summer will be full of a lot of trainings on campus.
If you were advising a prospective student that was looking at Morehead State, especially during this crisis, what programs are uniquely positioned to prepare students for the new normal?
Yeah, I think you raise a very interesting point, because big issues like this oftentimes change what students might be interested in going forward. Many of our students are forward-looking, and they may see opportunity from a job perspective in a number of areas. I could see IT programs, which are already popular, IT and engineering, gaining in popularity more, particularly around product design, maybe a ramp-up in production in the United States going forward to make up for maybe what has been a little bit of lag over the past couple of weeks or next couple of months. I could see safety and health type professions and programs doing very well. Our university's always had a very strong STEM plus health curriculum and program, so I could see that expanding ever more. Anything around telecommuting, telework, telemedicine, use of technology for meetings going forward. I think that may be the new norm, because budgets for a lot of companies, a lot of small businesses, enterprises like us, hospitals and other agencies may be strained for a while, and people will be looking at how do they communicate, how they engage in meetings and business with not a lot of travel. So I think a lot of telework, and that can be spread out across a lot of disciplines, will become very popular, and support of that will be paramount. So I could see some small businesses and young entrepreneurs coming out of the backside of this with a lot of creative thought going forward.
That kind of brings me to my next question. I know that one of the things that every organization across the country, across the world right now is thinking about is the economic impact of this virus on their organization. Have you looked at the way that MSU has been affected, or is that something that's still constantly changing?
You know, it doesn't take you very long to watch the news in the evenings or, you know, the blogs online to see that the economic factors here are already very, very tough on certain industries. Restaurant industry, healthcare in some cases, small businesses and others are all taking major hits. From an economic standpoint for our university, we anticipate that there will be some type of ramification. What's hard to gauge at this point is what it will be. So, by example, this spring semester, we were midway through the semester. So our semester had the luxury of continuing until May the 8th, when, you know, we would finish the spring term. Going forward, I think if we position our university correctly, I think if we continue to work with our students with what they want and the delivery method that they want, we'll be looking to minimize, you know, the negative aspects of it. But Leanne, I don't think there's any doubt that all universities and colleges in Kentucky are going to have to adapt some. What we've been telling our employees and our students is this is a wonderful time to make sure we're all flexible, make sure we're agile. We are a small to medium-sized university, and that has allowed us and will allow us going forward to make any necessary changes, hopefully at a more rapid pace than other large entities might be able to. And I think going forward, individuals, in our case students, may be looking for a nice small to medium-sized campus like us that's, we're not extremely rural, but, you know, we're an hour away from Lexington, not too far from, or an hour away from Ashland. They may be looking for an environment like us that feels safe and secure, a little bit smaller, cater to some of their needs. So I think maybe we may have a good opportunity here to shine a little bit because we are a small, safe campus, and we've been pretty financially conservative over the past couple of years, and we weathered a lot of storms. We'll weather this one just fine. So the impact is really unknown at this point, but I'm heartened because we have seen people make this turn quickly, and I know we can respond to whatever we need to in the future. So I'm optimistic.
Now, are there some changes with tuition or any other impacts to the student population that are being planned for the future?
There are. Actually, before this recent health concern even started, several months ago, we began planning that starting with our summer 2020 terms and going forward, that we'll be lowering graduate tuition for our College of Education master's courses. And the reason we wanted to do that is we wanted to make sure that we were servicing our school teachers in the state and beyond. So starting about May the 10th and going forward with all summer terms, even into the succeeding years going forward, we're going to be lowering College of Education graduate tuition for master's level individuals, teachers who are coming back to get their master's, down to what our undergraduate rate is. And that is a very competitive rate going forward. Many of those courses are online or hybrid already. Teachers out in our public and private schools both can take those from, you know, the luxury from their house or their school, and for the most part complete those without really coming to campus very much. So that's going to be a benefit going forward. That's been in the works for a couple of months, and we'll be messaging that out very, very soon.
All right, Dr. Morgan, is there anything else that you want to add about what's happening here at Morehead State during this pandemic?
Well, specifically, I'd like to thank all of our Eagles. We have had so many individuals on and off campus who have pulled together as a team. We've got a lot of loyal alumni out there who have asked, how can we help? Can we help a student? And our business is helping students. Our scholarship campaign has been wonderful. We have a number of individuals who have stepped up to the plate, not only in small ways, but large ways, and that will help propel us forward significantly. I want to thank our students in the end. I know they got abruptly transitioned, not only in many of them in their housing, but in their academic courses, and I think they've made this turn, and they're a very resilient group. Our campus is very resilient, and we look forward to the future. It may be a little bit different, but we look forward to the future.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, and we hope that the spring semester just gets a little easier as we move forward.
I think it will. Thanks, Leanne, and stay Eagle strong.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.
November 1967, a young PhD student was reviewing her data from the previous night when she noticed an odd signal. She discovered a repeating signal of pulses at a fixed interval. Each pulse was 1 1/3 seconds apart. Surely it is human-made, she thought. The young student and her PhD advisor went through extensive work and ruled out anything to do with Earth. What was this repeating signal coming from outer space? And why were the pulses so regularly spaced at 1 1/3 seconds and repeating? Was it intentional? She labeled the source LGM-1, Little Green Men 1. I'm Chanel Varani, director of the Space Science Center's Star Theater at Moorhead State University and host of Our Island Universe. Jocelyn Bell Burnell, born on July 15, 1943, grew up in Lurgan, Northern Ireland, and attended her local school, where she, like other girls, was not permitted to study science. Her parents and other parents protested against the school's policy and relented. Undeterred, she graduated from the University of Glasgow with a Bachelor of Science degree in physics and enrolled at the University of Cambridge as a PhD student. So on that day when Jocelyn Bell Burnell made this remarkable discovery, what was she to make of what she found? In one of her speeches, Jocelyn says, "I went home that evening very cross. Here I was trying to get a PhD out of a new technique, and some silly lot of little green men had to choose my aerial and my frequency to communicate with us. But was this signal really from aliens? After several years of further work, she and her colleagues had discovered that the source was a brand new class of object, a rapidly rotating neutron star, also known as a pulsar. A neutron star is the end fate of a star some 3 to 10 times more massive than our sun. Neutron stars are incredibly dense and quickly rotating stars and can emit beams of energy along its axis of rotation. If a neutron star is rotating such that this beam of energy lies along our line of sight, much like a lighthouse beacon, we'd see exactly what Jocelyn Bell Burnell had discovered." The paper announcing the discovery of pulsars had 5 authors. Jocelyn Bell Burnell's advisor was listed first, and Bell second.
In 1974, her advisor was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics, and Jocelyn Bell Burnell's contribution went unrecognized.
For decades, this decision was criticized by many in the scientific community. In 2018, however, Dame Jocelyn Bell Burnell was awarded the Special Breakthrough Prize in Fundamental Physics. Following the announcement of the award, she donated the roughly $4 million prize award to establish a scholarship for female, minority, and refugee students seeking to become physics researchers. Jocelyn Bell Burnell is now widely credited with one of the most significant achievements of the 20th century. Our Island Universe is produced at WMKY in cooperation with the Department of Physics, Earth Science, and Space Systems Engineering at Moorhead State University, home to the Ronald G. Eaglin Space Science Center. Learn more at moorheadstate.edu/star theater.